Warren versus the people. Are both parties ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Just as a preliminary matter, the case is set for a half-hour argument, and you have to keep track of your time, and please state your name as you begin your argument. Thank you. We're ready to hear from Mr. Warren's attorney.
May it please the court. My name is Alberto Garcia, and I'm appearing on behalf of the petitioner, Roland Warren, and as an onset matter, it really is an honor to appear before this court today. The period of delay resulting from the voluntary absence or unavailability of the defendant. As I make my arguments today, as I argued in the briefs, there needs to be force and effect to that word delay. There needs to be some actual delay in the proceedings. Now, this matter deals with 18-1-405 and its applicability to the unique facts and circumstances of this case. And as we apply the statute, we're guided by this court's decision in People v. Martin, which says, you know, there's no wooden or mechanical fashion that you apply the statute. Rather, you need to look at the facts and circumstances of each case. And I think when we bring the unique facts and circumstances of this case, I'm going to argue that the period of time between October 29th and September 10th, there was no delay during that period of time. Therefore, the district court erred in tolling the speedy trial provisions during that time. So let's start with the case. April 11th, 2010, Mr. Warren pleads not guilty. By statute, speedy trial is to run on October the 11th, 2007. Trial was set for September 10th, which is well within the speedy trial guidelines. There's a status conference, a trial readiness conference on August 29th, 2007. And that's when we get the issues that bring us here today. Mr. Warren was not present at that hearing. His counsel indicated that she believed that he had been arrested in another jurisdiction. There was some recess happened so that she could call and find out if he was indeed arrested somewhere else, and it turns out he was. And then there was some discussion as to whether the matter could stay on the trial court's docket for September the 10th. And I will readily concede that his trial counsel was not unequivocal that she could proceed to trial. In fact, I think the district court used the term in their analysis, she was wishy-washy. And I did some research to try to find some of this court's guidance on the legal terminology for wishy-washy, but it's not a lot there. But I think we'll use the common sense version of it. She absolutely was wishy-washy. She made some, you know, I don't know if we're going to go to trial. She made some, you know, she was hemming and hawing as to whether she could proceed. But even with her being wishy-washy, the trial court kept this case on the docket for trial on September the 10th.
Well, I have a question about that wishy-washiness. And I know this jumps your head in the facts a little bit, but when you get to the trial date, you have the defense attorney not even appearing and not even available for trial involved in a homicide. And so the legitimacy of this trial date, it seems to me, the wishy-washiness of it is greatly suspect. It kind of seems like a wink-wink trial date. This is actually just some resetting date. Because how else could the attorney just not be there?
Let me just add to that.
Yes, sir.
In the facts, it seems like the DA said, I haven't received any of the discovery from the defense, and the defense agreed. So I guess you have to answer Justice Martinez's question, which is why isn't this an individual matter which takes it out of the rule you've just mentioned?
All right, let's jumping ahead to September 10th. She wasn't even there. Another public defender comes and says she's double booked, she's in trial in another courtroom. And so our argument is going to be we can't jump ahead that it may have been I'm just going to do this, but really we're going to go reset it. But if you really look at the record, the judge says, I might make you go forward that day. Depending on what happens, and Mr. Warren's here, depending on how it's going to go, I may require the parties to go forward that day. So it was, there was a chance that that case was going to go forward to trial that day. Mr. Warren wasn't, and September 10th, again, he wasn't there. There was some dispute over whether he should have been writted or not, and you know, he was still in another jurisdiction. We can speculate what would happen if he had been there that day. Maybe another the attorney in the office would have covered for it. I don't know. But I would ask the court to look at, on that day, was on the day of from August to September, it remained on the trial docket. The judge said he might make him go forward. It wasn't removed from the court's docket. There was no delay. The proceedings moved forward as they were scheduled to.
Okay, I mean, I appreciate that the record seems to support that.
Yes.
There seems to be suggestion that something else is going on, but the record is not clear about that. The record, of course, doesn't speak to why, if that really is a trial date, the lawyer isn't even present and is involved in another case. And I don't want to skip your argument entirely, but if that therefore implies that there is no effect on trial, proceeding to trial until that trial date, what do you do with the non-appearance of the attorney on trial and non-preparedness on trial date?
Well, and on that date, the attorney said we're not ready for trial, or for whatever reason, said they couldn't proceed to trial that day. And that date was removed from the court's docket as a trial date. And pursuant to the statute at that time, the speedy trial was told. I mean, there's an actual delay, September 10th, attorney wasn't there, they couldn't proceed to trial, Mr. Warren wasn't there. On that day, it was removed, the trial date was vacated, and at that point, the speedy trial was told. I mean, that's when the statute kicks in, speedy trial tolls at that point. Once there is the next, we would argue once there is the actual delay.
Why are you still entitled to some relief if that's the case?
Because speedy trial told once it changed, transformed on the court's docket, which happened on September the 10th, on that time, that's when they told speedy trial. August 29th to September 10th, there was no change in the court's docket. This matter was still proceeding forward as if it was going to go to trial. That's why we would argue that period of time period, that 12 days in there, is excluded from those speedy trial computations.
If I accept that argument,
yes, sir.
Where is the speedy trial violation, since you, on the date of the scheduled trial, September 10th, you are then agreeing that the time tolls then?
All right, then we go into, then it becomes a mathematic problem. And when I heard math, that kind of scared me, so I think that's why I went to law school, so I didn't have to do a lot of math. But if you look at the time computations, there was between August 29th and October the 11th. That's when it was reset for another court appearance. That's a 34-day period. 34 days when the speedy trial was told. On October 11th, it's then set for trial. Basically, on the 34th, on October 11th, they come in and they set the matter for a trial. That's basically they set it for trial basically on the 34th day. It's actually the 37th day because the 34th day falls on a Saturday. So it's set for trial on the basically at the 34th day, the last day they can do it for speedy trial. Well, that 34 days includes the period from October 29th to October the 11th. We argue that period from October 29th to September 10th, that 12 days, that shouldn't be included in that 34-day period. That 12 days should never have been told. That 34 days is not part of that 34-day period. Therefore, when you look at how much time should have been told, you take the 12 from the 34, that's even math I can do, that's 22 days. Is how long the district court had to set this matter for a trial.
I'm sorry, I think you lost me. Why did the court, by your theory, have 22 days to reset?
Because the district court used the analysis that from August the 29th until October the 11th.
Well, I'm not sure why the district court's analysis matters here.
Yes, sir.
Because I think the question is, if I accept your argument, and there's no effect on speedy trial until the non-appearance on September 10th, we then have tolling. Isn't the question, where does that get you? Where does speedy trial run now that there's a non-appearance and a failure to be prepared on the trial date.
From August 29th to October 11th, that's 34 days the speedy trial was told. For one, him not appearing on the 29th, and then again on September 10th when he didn't appear on that day. So from October 29th until October the 11th, speedy trial was told. So that's 34 additional days in which were added to the speedy trial computations. Our argument is that 12 of those days should never have been added to it. The 12 days from the 29th to the 10th should never have been part of that 34 days. Therefore, there were 22 additional days to try him for these charges. The trial happened on the 37th day. Therefore, that's outside of the speedy trial range.
Ms. Garcia, can I ask you about your 12-day argument?
Yes, sir.
Do you think that the defense counsel or the defendant himself had any obligation to inform the court on August 29th that he couldn't appear or would need a writ or something like that?
There was some late notice to his own counsel that he was in another jurisdiction, and in fact,
I think the record reveals there was no notice to this counsel. Yeah. Also, the record reveals that he had a warrant for his arrest out of Fremont County, right?
I believe so, yes, sir.
He didn't appear.
And she thought she knew where he might be. They took a recess so that she could confirm where he was.
So, was there any indication, though, that he had to be written up for the next date?
For the September the...
Yes, 10th. That's your 12-day argument, as I get it.
For the September 12th date, from the record, it appears that the defense counsel was not clear in her request to the court that he should be written over.
Well, doesn't that have some relevancy to your argument or not? Those facts? He combined the points that Justice Martinez making about the wishy-washiness and the date and no one being ready on September 10th, plus no information about the defendant's whereabouts coming from anyone? Doesn't that kind of sink your ship a little bit?
I think it sinks... no.
Okay, no, why not?
On September 10th, he wasn't there. You're right. Did his attorney have some obligation to go and ask the court, I need him to be written over? And she didn't do that. No. And on September 10th, he wasn't there. Therefore, on September 10th, he wasn't there. That gets told. We're making no argument regarding that. I just don't see how there was any actual delay. How there was any actual delay on the court's docket between October 29th and September 10th, when the district court judge said, even with all the things, the wishy-washiness notwithstanding, that he was going to leave it for a trial. He said, I may make it go forward. He made some other comment. I left this matter on for a trial. He said, I left this for a trial. I don't see how there was any actual delay between the 29th and the 10th. Mr. Warren wasn't available, sure, but this wasn't a motions hearing. This wasn't a court trial. This was a readiness conference to determine whether this matter should stay on the court's docket. And even with this wishy-washiness, it did stay on the court's docket with threats that this matter could proceed to trial on the 10th. He wasn't there on the 10th. He wasn't written over. His defense counsel wasn't clear that she needed a writ issued, and that's why on the 10th, sure, speedy trial's told. He wasn't there.
Before you run out of time, could I ask you a slightly different question?
Yes, sir.
We've been talking about delays under the 405-6F, but what counsel said in this wishy-washy exchange back on the 29th, or even her colleagues in the public defender's office on the 10th, be taken to constitute a request for a continuance of the trial date?
And I know that argument was also made in the Attorney General's answer brief. We argue that, because Mr. Warren was not there, although his attorney wasn't present at that on the 10th.
But would you agree that if his counsel asked for a continuance of the trial date, that would begin a new six-month period?
Absolutely, yes. I think the statute and case law is clear that if his counsel comes in and says, we're not ready, we need a continuance, that serves to restart the six-month period.
And do you take it then that back on the 29th in this wishy-washy exchange we talk about that the trial judge, it seems, is it not true that counsel did in effect say then, I don't think I'll be ready, why don't you convert that into a status conference date and we'll set the trial date later? And then I guess my question for you is, do you think the record indicates the judge denied that or that he simply postponed ruling on it to see what would happen?
No, I would think that he denied it because a little further inquiry said, they started to get into it a little further. He said, the judge said, is there any reason I shouldn't leave this as a trial date? She said, probably not. Better if she just said no. Said, I don't see any reason. She said, no, probably not. She goes, I think we're going to get a disposition, but, I do think that, we should. She did ask that it be left as a trial date. So I see that I'm out of time, but.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Ms. Garcia.
May it please the court and counsel. My name is Melissa Allen. I'm here on behalf of the people. As this court is aware, each case needs to be viewed individually from the facts when considering whether it should be dismissed for a failure to afford a speedy trial to the defendant. And it's the people's position that the fact that the defense attorney was unable to proceed on the 10th, clearly unable to proceed on the 10th. I don't think there was any question about that, that was tantamount to a request for a continuance by the defense, and that tolling shouldn't even be an issue. A new 6-month period of speedy trial should have begun on that date, regardless of the fact that the defendant was not present. And I know that the Court of Appeals did not rule on this issue. But as this court is aware, a party may defend the judgment of the trial court on any grounds, even those not contemplated on the way up. And
do you know
that wasn't argued in the Court of Appeals, you're saying? The people didn't raise that?
The people did not raise that.
Do you disagree with the rationale of the lower courts and the Court of Appeals, majority opinion?
I agree with the ultimate ruling that speedy trial was not, that there was not a speedy trial violation. However, I don't think that we needed to get into the issue of tolling and the 34 days and whether there was a delay on the 29th and whether it was who it was attributable to, because it's clear from the record that the defense attorney, there was no way the defense attorney was going to trial. I think it's important to look at just really quickly what was said.
Well, part of the reason was that the DA read him at the wrong place, right?
That's correct.
We've had judges require appointed counsel to go to trial on the day of trial at times.
Absolutely.
Whether they did it correctly or not is a different story. But
that's true. But when you've got a record being made that says, another public defender, appeared in court the morning of the 10th. And of course, this is after, on the 29th, the defense attorney is saying, I don't think I'm going to be ready to go. I think we're going to have a disposition. I haven't been in contact with my client. I've filed no endorsements. I mean, this case was not ready to proceed to trial, but it's left on the docket for trial. So on the morning of trial, another attorney walks in from the public defender's office and says, Ms. Hyatt, not that she's in another trial and so she can't go to trial today. He says, Ms. Hyatt was not going to be prepared to go to trial today. She was never going to be prepared to go to trial, no matter what. And that's got to be viewed as a request for a continuance, giving us a new 6 months of speedy trial.
Counsel, if I might interrupt you.
Sure.
Are you now shifting gears, so to speak, and relying principally on the argument that her defense counsel's non-appearance on September 10th was tantamount to a request to continue the trial, granting an additional 6 months, and the court need not even examine this 12-day period between August 29th and September 10th?
Yes. I mean, I argued that in my brief as well, so I don't know hopefully I'm not completely switching gears, but...
You no longer rely on...
No, I have an argument on that, too, if you want to hear that. So I was going with this one first.
Let's hear your other one. I'd be interested in your other one.
Okay. Well, with respect to the delay attributable to the defense on the 29th and the 10th, I think delay doesn't just have to mean, you know, the trial was unable to go forward on that particular day. I think delay means more than that. And with respect to a trial readiness conference on the 29th, delay means, as the DA pointed out, we can't do anything today. This is a status conference where we're supposed to stand up and announce ready. Yes, we're going. No, we have a disposition. And we can't do any of that because the defendant's incarcerated somewhere else. And I disagree with any suggestion by the defense in the trial court that wasn't the defendant's fault. Of course it was his fault. He FTA'd in another county and a warrant issued on that other case, and that's why he was incarcerated and unable to appear on this case. And when you can't announce ready, that's a delay. And they were unable to, I mean, the defense attorney really wasn't saying anything because he wasn't there. She wasn't sure where he was. She hadn't been in touch with him. She does make a record after they go off the record that he's in Fremont County. But I read it carefully, and she doesn't say where in Fremont County for the purposes of a writ. It's never said Fremont County Jail until the trial date when he, again, wasn't there.
Well, counsel, these are the kind of situations that unfortunately happen really pretty often, don't they? I mean,
yes.
So what is it you're suggesting, that every time there is some kind of ambiguity about whether there might be a delay or not, the district judge should insist upon the defendant waiving speedy trial?
No, this is as far as the tolling is concerned. At this point,
suggesting the district judge should keep track of these days? I mean, it's hard enough to keep track of speedy trial in the first place.
Well, I think that it's probably incumbent on all parties to make a note of the fact that the defendant's not there. It's set for a particular sort of hearing, a status conference, for the parties to announce whether they're ready to proceed or not.
So the rule that you would be asking us to adopt is if the defendant FTAs, then any delay attributable to that non-appearance should be treated as what?
A tolling.
And those days should be added to the 6 months.
Yes. Along with any reasonable other period of time to allow for redocketing. I don't think it has to be just those days. I think you have to be able to get the case back on the docket as well.
My trouble with that is that the trial date is unaffected, intact. How do you attribute delay to an appearance or a non-appearance which does not affect the trial date?
Well, I think, I guess...
I mean, what was delayed?
Once you move the trial date, you know, a corresponding 12 or 13 days, but of course it never works quite that precisely.
Exactly. Well, the delay...
You vacate the trial date and turn it into a setting date or something like that, which would then seem to imply there was a delay, but it's keeping the trial date.
I think
it's troublesome, it seems to me, to your argument.
Well, I hate to be talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I guess it depends on the argument that I'm making. I
mean, well, otherwise, this is an alternative argument.
The delay is concerned. As far as the delay is concerned, I see that September 10th date is just keeping a date on the docket. I mean, it was almost as if the judge is saying, why don't we just keep this date, period, because we don't know what's going on. The defense isn't able to tell us anything. They haven't talked to the defense, so we're going to call it back up on this day.
I have the same suspicion, but isn't it the burden of the court and the district attorney to, you know, maintain a record with respect to speedy trial? And it seems to me here that despite that suspicion, the record shows the trial date wasn't affected.
Okay, and then that... So fast forward to the trial date. The trial date's unaffected.
I didn't go into your other argument. I'm really
right.
Well, working with the tolling argument.
Let's assume we take the 29th to the 10th out of my tolling argument. so that we just use that period of time from the trial date, September 10th, and then we've got this trial setting that's a few days outside of speedy trial. I still don't think that there's a violation because you have to allow a period of time to get the case back on the docket. I don't think that you can just say one day outside and so speedy trial is violated. We have to be able to get that case back on the docket.
But along those lines, didn't at the September 10th conference, didn't defense counsel request an October trial setting and the trial court denied that? I want to say that she asked for a substitute counsel, asked for an October trial setting, and that the trial court denied that October trial setting, which would have been still within speedy trial, and instead reset it for a status conference.
Yeah, let's just make positive about that. The original speedy was October 11th.
That's correct. And they set it for a status conference on the 2nd, and that was when the wrong writ was done. So that's when they started the untolling of speedy at that point. I don't recall, I apologize. I know that there was a lot of discussion about she says, my objection is it's their responsibility to file it. We can be ready for a trial date within speedy. But then, though, the defense attorney goes on to say, Ms. Hyatt's been trying to be in contact with him. She's pretty sure he's there. She's been playing phone tag, and she hadn't even been in contact with him. So I don't know. It seems to me that it's questionable that you can be ready for a trial date within speedy, which is coming up awfully quickly at that point, when the attorney who's trying the case hasn't even been in touch with the defendant and isn't, at this point, again, isn't even sure where he is.
I'm just going to follow up on that. Is there any indication in that exchange that the trial court had time available to set the
There's trial? No indication whatsoever.
Returning to Justice Martinez's question, again, my concern is if the goal of the speedy trial statute is to bring the defendant to trial within the 6 months, then how is trial actually delayed here? At the end of the wishy-washy exchange, both the prosecution and defense counsel committed to the original setting, correct?
Correct.
And so at least on August 29th, at that point, when everybody agreed to maintain the September 10th trial date, there was no delay in the trial date.
There was no delay in the trial date.
There was certainly a delay in the readiness conference, but yes. That's a procedural interruption in the process. I don't see that how the goal of the statute has been impeded by what happened on August 29th. I'm having trouble understanding why those 12 days should be charged to the defendant when the trial date was not changed.
Because procedurally, there's a reason to have a status conference. I mean, if it weren't an important proceeding to allow for a discussion of what's going to be going on at that next court date, there wouldn't be a status conference. And I don't think the statute can be read. I don't think it's just a delay in the trial. I think it's a delay in the proceedings leading up to the trial.
So you would have us craft a rule along the lines that Justice Rice was indicating for any procedural delay. Anytime there's a continuance or even an interim hearing, status conference, all of those delays would be charged to the defense and tacked on to the 6 months?
Not necessarily all of them. I think again, you have to look at it on a case, and I realize that given the thousands and tens of thousands of cases, talking about looking at each one individually, but when you're talking about a purposeful failure to appear on the part of the defendant, which I think that in this case it is, an inability to announced ready for the next proceeding, I think that delay has to be attributable to the defense, whether or not that date remains set for the 10th.
Your better argument is the one that you started with, do you think? I mean, is that what you are really trying to get us to go along with?
Yes.
And you just think when it doesn't matter what happened with tolling, we shouldn't even talk about this as a tolling case. When the lawyer didn't show up and wasn't ready, things started over again, new 6 months.
I think that's correct.
And the lawyer was clear that she, I think, or he, whichever, wasn't ready because somebody else appeared in her place.
Correct. On the 1st, on the 29th, she was, I thought, fairly clear that she anticipated a disposition, but that she had not been in contact with her client. So she couldn't be any more clear than that on that date. But she also said, you know, I'm not ready. And the DA said, I don't even have an endorsement of witnesses. So I think at that point, it's questionable whether the case is going to proceed to trial, but it was on the docket, which is for a trial setting, which is, for that argument, a good thing, because the public defender was absolutely unable to proceed to trial on that date, regardless of the fact that the defendant wasn't present. And I think that this court's cases support a finding of that being basically a request for a continuance by the defense. I apologize for going over. We would just ask that this court affirm on other grounds the Court of Appeals' opinion.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. I should have mentioned earlier that Justice Hobbs could not be here this morning, but he is participating with the court on both of these cases. The case will be submitted and